When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, what's up, and welcome back to Ripe Reviews. Today we're talking about Hellraiser from 2022, directed by David Bruckner. I'm Joel Scola.
And I'm
Sean O'Rourke. I know, I was just gonna do a Hellraiser thing. I screwed it up.
You sure are.
Are you, which Cenobite are you? Are you the Chatterer?
I think I'm the Gape.
Oh, the Gape. The Gape?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Think about it. The dealer's definitely doing some gaping.
Is there hooks in your ass, like spreading your...
That's what I do. That's my power. I shoot chains from off screen, obviously, yeah. Joe, and then they tear your asshole apart.
Oh, yeah. We'll tear your asshole apart. Yeah.
We have such shite to show you. Such shites to show you.
We have such shite to show you.
That's when they attack the pub.
How is there not... A fucking porn? I'm sure there is.
Oh, there's gotta there's be. Gotta be. Yeah. If it's not being made now, it's coming soon.
It's coming soon. You know? It's coming soon to a wood rocket near you.
Exactly.
But yeah, here we are talking about Hellraiser in 2022. And, you know, right out of the gate, this series has had a bunch of fucking problems. None of these films are even worth really watching after Bloodline, in my opinion.
I checked out on two, and I think I've said this on the show before. I probably should eventually go back and watch like Bloodline and the Space One at least. And there's that
Bloodline. Bloodline is the
okay,
space
and the video game one with Henry Cavill. Oh, and
that's Hellworld.
Yeah, Lance Hendrickson's in there, but I just haven't gotten around to it. I mean, like, I love Hellraiser. It's like one of my favorite movies ever. But just the sequels, for some reason, just I don't know. They have eluded me.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about it. I want to get to my final thought of this. And just kind of like the evolution of the series and what it was originally, how it transferred from the book to the first movie to the rest of the films themselves and how it kind of lost its path two. And it became the studio thing where it's like, bring the fucking guy with the pinheads, but you know, pinhead back.
Which is kind of funny because we're talking about Halloween a lot this month, as of this release, and Halloween Ends has just dropped, which that's also a series that is like after the first one, it's just like, you know, Mustafa Akkad came in and that was the end of that.
Well, he was there for the first one even too.
No, but like the whole like you can't kill Michael thing, and then just the series just like kind of goes off the rails because of that.
There is no producer on the face of this earth that is going to let a cash cow die. There's just not. And like I understand that.
Oh yeah, from a business standpoint.
I mean, this is a little, Hellraiser is a little different though than the Halloween series.
Sure.
Because at a certain point, they were just cranking these out to so that Dimension, I believe a Dimension would keep the IP.
Well, speaking of that video game themed one, I think that and one of the other ones, Lance was in both because they filmed them like back to back and he was in the area still.
Yeah.
They were in Belgium or something that.
Yeah. Now, don't quote me because I haven't seen it or done or did any research on those later sequels.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't the point of this video. But like they were only making the movies to keep the IP.
Yeah.
Because it's the Hellraiser IP and they wanted to hang on to it.
Sure.
Which I get it. He's one of the, you know, Pinhead is one of the iconic or icons of horror.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So here we are in 2022. All of these movies have come out. I think there's like fucking nine Hellraiser films.
Eight or nine
in the pocket. And there might even be 10.
If you actually look at the Wikipedia for this one, it'll actually tell you, like, this is the 10th in the franchise.
It does.
Or whatever
it does. Yeah. Okay, so it's the 10th Hellraiser movie. So this is 10, right?
I'm guessing. I'm throwing out a random number.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm just saying it'll tell you. Like Halloween Ends is apparently the 13th one. Who knew?
Yeah. Well,
Wikipedia did.
That's a lot of fucking Halloween movies. Yeah, that's a lot of movies.
But there's probably about 10 of these fuckers.
But how much is there to... How many of them are worth watching?
I mean, the second one really fleshes out the lore, and then I guess they just do nothing with that after that, my understanding, or they shit on it or something.
Again, it changes, right? Like from the first film to the second film.
It changes a little, but for the most part, I think they're good changes.
But when we go to three, all the game changes because now 3 and on, I'm more or less, like, it's Hell on Earth and all the shit. It's like the Cenobites are trying to, like, conquer Earthrealm.
Right. Like, isn't Hell on Earth, is that the one where, like...
That's CD Cenobite and all that shit. Yeah.
Is that the one when Pinhead has, like, the Doug Bradley version is, like, the good side of him that's, like, trying to stop him or some shit?
That's not 2?
That is in 2, but I was...
Oh, it's in 2, but yeah, but there's, like...
I think it's in 3 or 4, because I did, like, minor research going into this, and I did read that that was a thing in one of those 2.
Full disclosure.
Yeah.
I didn't rewatch any of these for this review.
Same. I had planned, like, to watch the first and second one, and then, like, if we had more time, I was going to maybe do 3 and 4 at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just ended up watching this one twice. Yeah,
but, like, I've seen the first one ton. Like, I know it.
Yeah.
I know it so well that I don't need to watch it again.
I mean, we could just, if we really wanted to, but rather than that bore our listeners, we could just be firing one-liners off.
Sure.
You know, like, you know, here's a cookie, little girl.
Hey, come to daddy. So with that being said, if there was any series that really needed a reboot and or remake and or a new
or requel, even
a requel, it needed you know, the series has been on life support, right? This is the one of the series that could actually use it.
Sure.
Because I feel like we've gotten so far away from what the story of Hellraiser, the Hellbound Heart, even was begin with. Like, if you look at the first film and the last film, not the remake, but like the last film, it's just so fucking not the same concept.
I mean, yeah, just purely based on trailers alone.
Yeah. So, and again, like, I haven't rewatched all of these in a while, and I'm sure I'd have a lot to say about the sequels.
That's something we could come back to in the future.
I do want to come back to it, because we did muse about doing Bloodline.
Yeah.
Because that's like the black sheep of the series. Mm-hmm. And is often the splitting point in... Sometimes, I think Hellraiser 3 is, but I think 4, Bloodline, is also a splitting point for fans. Anyway. So we're going to talk about the 2022 Hellraiser.
Yes.
Which is a full reboot, remake, remaster of the series.
Yes, because going into this, that first teaser and, like, everything, like, leading up to it, I was under the impression this would be, like, closer to the novella, but, like, honestly, like, the original Clive Barker, like, a movie is pretty damn close to the novella already, other than, like, I think some minor details were, like, Uncle Frank isn't really Uncle Frank. It's like,
yeah, I didn't know if you wanted to talk about this yet, but I was going to jump head first, because I just reread the novella.
Yeah, do you want to talk about it just for a minute?
Yeah,
here?
Well, I just reread the novella on my vacation that I went on, and I hadn't read it in a while, and I forgot how fucking good that novella is. Like, it's awesome. Like, it's creepy and fucking weird and amazing.
I mean, Clive is just one of the all-timers.
What blew my mind when I was rereading it was, like, fuck. Like, I mean, so the original Hellraiser movie from 1987, Clive writes and directs.
Yep.
Okay.
Based
on his own story. So he adapted his own novella to a screenplay.
Right.
Right. It is nearly verbatim the novella. Okay. All of the pieces that matter are intact, which I thought was incredible that he was able to keep it all in there. And there are minor changes, like Kirstie,
no, you're right.
Yeah, Kirstie isn't
not Uncle Frank. I always call him Uncle Frank. What, Larry?
Larry,
whatever the fuck his name is in
the
book.
So his name's Rory in the book.
Right.
That's why I'm like, what the fuck was his name again? Larry. Kirstie's not Larry or Rory's daughter. She's like the one that got away, kind of thing.
Right.
Or
that was the difference.
She's always been, like, in love with Rory, but he ended up marrying Julia. That was a thing.
Right, yeah, right after she fucked Uncle Frank on her wedding dress.
But, like, it's crazy because that's in the book. Like, it's all, with the exception of that, and, like, there's a couple other little things. I really love the introduction of the Cenobites in the book, or the novella, rather. It's pretty close to the movie, but, like, they show Frank, like his backstory with it, and, like, there's just stuff you can't show in the movie, or that like, doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, or it doesn't translate well.
Yeah, well, yeah, because there's like
the movie.
Because what's cool about it is they, you know, Clive mentions that there's other ways into this realm.
Oh, like the labyrinth or whatever.
Well, not necessarily a labyrinth. It's just, see, in the book, it's not really described. It's just this. It's another dimension, basically, right? And he doesn't go in depth into what it is exactly, and mostly describes it as like a big black void.
Which I guess it does make sense because he did end up writing, I think, the screenplay for two, but that was after the first one did super well. So
sure.
I guess, why
and
would that come
And
up?
I'm sure the exec was like, no, we got to see the hell world. Show me the fucking
Well,
hell
it was
world.
Cool, so okay.
It is cool, but not necessarily the point. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I have problems with two. I'm just saying there are a lot of that I do like. There's just... Well, I'll get into it when I talk about this, the new one.
So the Le Merchant box, or Le Merchant, however you want to say that, the puzzle box, the infamous Lament configuration, is just one vessel to the other alternate dimension. Okay. Now, it's different for everybody. The gateway and all this stuff is all legendary and it's all hearsay and only the fucking scummiest of the scummy people know how to fucking get there, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what's cool about it, because Frank is like this drug dealer, you know, he's like a thrill seeker, sexual deviant, he's all fucked up. And the reason he seeks out the box is because he's expelled all of the earthly pleasures.
Right, well, he's got to get the next best thing. He's tried everything.
But
even
like,
Rocky Road? Believe it or not.
Ramen. He ate ramen and was like, this is not good enough.
It wasn't even the stuff you put on like the oven. He got it like at a restaurant.
He got it like at a restaurant.
Egg in it.
Yeah,
pork.
Unbelievable. The seasoned egg and everything.
Tokonatsu.
He got a tonkatsu. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
And some chashu pork, man. He was ready. He was there.
Now I'm getting hungry.
So, I love the way they do it in the book, or how it's explained in the book, is that, you know, Frank, has, again, like I said, exhausted all everything, the earthly pleasures, and seeks the ultimate pleasure.
Right, right.
What I like about it in the book is, like, in his head, before he summons the Cenobites, he thinks that, like, he even says it to the Cenobites, like, oh, yeah, I thought there was just going to be, like, hot bitches around me, like, fucking me, like, forever, and it was going to be awesome. And they're like, no, Frank, no, it's our kind of pleasure.
Oh, my God.
And it's cool when they show up.
Angels to some, Joe.
Demons to others, yeah. So when they come, he's like taken aback. He wasn't sure what to expect, right? And by the way, Frank has like spent months and months and months and years trying to solve this box. Mm. And he finally does it. And he has all like the offerings and shit around. So when they come, all of them are described. They're not really described. There's a few that they call he or whatever. But mostly their genitals have like drapery over it, and they're so fucking fucked up and disfigured he can't tell what they
are.
Right. They're flayed, they have shit going through their head, and like their skin's ripped off. So when people were talking about Jamie Clayton being Pinhead, and like it was a female Pinhead and all that bullshit, and it was the characters are fucked up. It's not about that.
Right, yeah.
Like it's not like that's the whole point, is like these beings. It doesn't fucking matter if they're male or female or androgynous or both or whatever. Like, that's not the point of this. And in the book, it says something like, oh, the one with the pins in its head says something like an excited schoolgirl. And it's like, that could mean anything.
Well, right. And it's like, it's actually, I think, called the Hell Priest in the book. But then Pinhead was like a name that people gave it, and then it just stuck.
Not even Hell Priest. They don't even mention hell.
Oh, really?
Okay. In the book. It's like its own thing. These things are from beyond in a completely different world. And that's what makes it even cooler, because it's not as simple as hell.
Right. Well, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is something that comes out in the movies. And especially when you call it fucking Hellraiser.
Wow.
People are going to be like, oh, yeah, it's hell.
Sure.
That's where the Cenobites come from. You know, in this dimension, there's like this main architect and things like that who like the engineer, they call him. And he's like the fifth Cenobite. And he basically makes up different tortures for people. And I thought the cool thing, just, I know I'm going deep into this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I know I'm going deep into this. But like, another thing I thought was really cool was that when they take Frank, the way it's described, it's not just hooks in him ripping him apart. And you can't really, I mean, you could, I was hoping that the new one was going to do this, because there's ways to do this, right? Now, they give him the ultimate pleasure by heightening all of his senses. Mm. So, like, Frank can feel the fucking dust from the room land on his hand,
oh,
and
wow.
It's like giving him an orgasm. And like he hears shit from like he hears like a fucking
it's like too much.
Yeah, he hears like the blood rushing through his veins and shit inside of him and his like stomach gurgling and all this stuff. He can see this fucking roach like across the room, like wink at him and shit, like all the way across the room. And then the
Kafka.
And then the last right?
Help me.
Yeah, it's fucking hey, don't worry. It's Beetlejuice.
Yeah, there you go.
The last thing is his mind. You know how your thoughts can run away or like, you know, like when your mind races and stuff like at night and stuff, like if you have any anxiety or something. He goes into like this fucking psychosis where he's thinking about all of his thoughts and memories are fucking slamming together at once. Every pleasurable, horrible, and visceral experience he's ever had is just fucking punching into one another.
Like atoms
and
colliding.
Ripping through each other. And in all of this, he's getting an erection from it. And he's like furiously masturbating as he's sitting there like screaming from this sensory overload. And he finally comes on the floor. It's important.
Wow. This is movie dumpster. We have to mention it.
So then the best part of that at the end, this one being shows up who's not Pinhead. It's this woman Cenobite, clearly a woman Cenobite. And she's sitting on a top of fucking severed heads with her like legs spread open. And she's like, oh, have you woken up yet or from the dream or whatever? And he's like, what do you mean? That's just the beginning. So I guess she's going to like fuck him and like do all this crazy shit to him.
Going to snooze to him to
death.
Sounds intense.
The
again, it's Barker.
I know, but the things that they don't show make you think after all stuff that just happened to him and this kind of torture that he's about to go through. And again, that's their version of pleasure, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that was cool. And one other thing I just want to note from the book is, and also from the movie is like, it's never really explained how Uncle Frank comes back in Hellraiser.
I mean, they don't go deep into it. It's just you see the blood from Larry fall on his where he died.
And where he died,
but your brain has to fill in the holes.
I know, but so this is why he comes back after Rory's blood reignites that.
Now, they explain it in the book
because the last. Normally, when the Cenobites take you, they take you and they remove every part of you.
Right, right.
From wherever you died, wherever you're taken from. And one of the tortures is that they show you the last place you were as they're torturing you. Just to remind you of where you used to be and all the things from that dimension.
Oh.
Right? Okay. Like, remember that? You used to be there and it wasn't so bad, was it? Now you're fucking eternally tortured. And now you have to watch it. And that's like one of the engineer's things. But the reason Frank's able to come back is two reasons. Usually there's nothing expelled when the Cenobites take you, but he had just freshly fucking cum all over that floor. So his fucking spunk is up on that floor. And it's an abandoned house, so nobody's been in it for years. So it's just been on the wood there.
Right.
So when Rory comes, or Larry comes in and spills his blood all over it.
It gets on the fucking cum.
It gets on the cum, reignites, or gains, Frank gains passage back to the world. Also because it's blood relative. So,
right.
Since it's his brother.
It's a double whammy.
It's a double whammy there because he's able to be reborn from the same blood. Or
he
something
has like a
like
one
that.
In a million shot.
So
kind
the cum
of
and the blood mix together and he's able to pass over.
I mean, I'm into it. That is honestly.
I thought that was fucking cool.
I mean, stuff like maybe not blood hitting cum, but stuff like that is not a common trope in horror and fantasy, but it's a thing that does come up occasionally.
But it's very Clive Barker, like sex and torture and blood and all that, those kinds of stuff are throughout it. Also, something I just want to note is like, there's not Clive Barker's gay,
right?
Let's just get it out of the way.
That for anyone that doesn't know,
yeah, but like that doesn't define a story. That doesn't make a story. And like, the Hellbound Heart doesn't have any homosexual things in it. But if it did, it wouldn't change. No. The main point of the story. Like, if you swapped out Julia for a man and he was married to Larry or Rory, it would still work.
Yeah. I don't see why not.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So my point is, like, anything that's explicitly gay doesn't matter to the main point of the story.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
No, I get what you're saying.
Because I saw a few people talk about the new Hellraiser and they're like, oh, it's so gay and it's so this. And it's like, well, I mean,
Clive Barker created it.
Yeah, but like,
it's not even. I would argue against that a little bit. I mean, I to a point. can maybe understand why some people would think that, but...
And please do not get me wrong. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, that there's gay people in it or anything like that. My point is, you don't have... It doesn't matter that they're gay or
no. It doesn't...
You know what I mean?
It doesn't impact this new movie at all. Like, it's just... They're a couple. Something horrible happens to one of them.
My point is...
That's exactly. It.
Yeah, it's still horrible no matter which way you cut it. Right? But anyway, that's all I wanted to talk about. Because I just thought that was so fascinating from the novella, because I hadn't read it in a while, and I just remember everything that happens in this. And it's,
I do want to read it, because my wife had read it a few years ago.
You can borrow right there.
Cool.
It's really fucking good. So I really liked... So in that being said, it's crazy how faithful the original movie is to Barker's original vision.
Which I think is what set us off into that conversation. Yeah, yeah. I was saying how we thought that's what this was going to be, but in retrospect, we already got that.
Right. Now, I just wanted to come out of the gate with that because you did mention that. And like when it was announced, when Hellraiser 2022 was announced, you know, that was one of the things like, oh, it's going to be closer than novella. And I'm like, oh, huh. That's pretty cool. And then, like, I went back and read it, and I was like, wait a second. The first one is the novella.
Well, that's why I wanted to read it. I wanted to see how close it was. But I just ended up looking up online to see what the differences were. And those were, like, the key ones. And then you just filled in the gaps.
Yeah, but, like, again, those components, you can flop them around, and it really doesn't make a difference to the story. Like, the core part of it, and, like, the meanings behind everything, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here a little bit, but I kind of prefer that they just did a straight-up remake than trying to dog the original.
Okay.
I'm guessing Joe doesn't necessarily feel the same way.
Okay, so I guess let's just jump into it. First of all, I want to say that the Cenobites, albeit it's a movie,
mm-hmm.
I get it. You gotta sell fucking tickets, or you gotta sell videos, or whatever the fuck it is. And the Cenobites became the focal point for the series.
Well, right.
They're the selling point. They're not the main... The bad guy in Hellraiser isn't Pinhead or the Cenobites. It's Uncle Frank. It's Frank Cotton. He's a piece of shit. You know what I mean? And he's the main antagonist.
I guess, yeah. Like, I don't know where you're going with that, but my guess is you don't really get Frank Cotton until, like, the last half hour.
And who could give a fuck?
Yeah.
I sure couldn't give a shit.
Okay. You want to just do like a quick plot crunch? This is a ripe review.
Yeah,
so we're
go
not
for it.
Gonna
go
do like a hardcore.
I know I went a little long, so I apologize.
No. I mean, you don't have to.
I just wanted to get that out.
I guess basically this movie, the setup is there's this girl, Riley, who's a drug addict or recovering drug addict. And her boyfriend, basically, who's a really bad influence on her, talks her into robbing the shipping container. Long story short, it has a fucking a puzzle box in it, and then she starts to solve it, unknowing that what it actually does. And in this movie, specifically, which may be something they did in the sequels that I just haven't seen, but when you solve the puzzle, it has like multiple forms that it turns into.
Yeah.
And in this movie, it's basically when you solve each form, like a knife comes out of it and it stabs you or somebody else in the vicinity,
which then makes you like a blood sacrifice,
right? And then they show up and kill you. And then basically as the movie goes on, she's investigating why that is, because her brother gets taken by the Cenobites, but she doesn't know that yet. And there's this big kind of confrontation at the end as they're trying to figure out how to end what's happening. And I'm leaving a lot of details out, but it kind of culminates at this mansion of this guy Voight, who is that kind of Uncle Frank style character in this film. It's not comparable, but I'm saying the actual antagonist.
Yeah.
Because Leviathan is not an antagonist. It's a god that is called upon.
Yes.
And I guess just my final point is that they take concepts from specifically the first two films and try to put a new spin on it. And that's basically the gist of it.
Yeah, pretty much. So do you want to talk about the box first? A little bit?
I thought the box was cool, personally.
I thought the box was fine. I don't really have a problem with that. I
like that it was like... Every time someone got stabbed, like, the box kind of has, like, a mind of its own and starts to solve itself to get into the next position.
See, that I didn't like.
You don't like that? I thought that was pretty cool.
No, I didn't like the... Okay. The whole point of the box or any... Okay. Before I say that...
Sure.
There are multiple vessels.
Like
I said, like I said, in the book, there's multiple vessels how to get in touch with the
Cenobites.
So, like, the Lemochan box is just one vessel.
Right.
So like, I'm like, okay, because
like Voight in that opening scene, not to cut you off, but like they don't ever really focus on it. But he's
they
like
don't even talk about it.
No, but he's
not even named.
He's like an occult collector.
Yeah,
and you even see like one of the Cenobites they show later has like mechanical arms, and I swear to God, you could see one of those arms just in like a glass frame. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it.
I mean, it's possible.
The point is he knows a lot about Cenobites, which our main character ends up finding out later because she like breaks into his house and finds his research.
That's too much.
You think so?
I think so.
Think they're because, like trying to do too much in one movie?
So here's my problem with it. So the box itself and the way it functions in this movie, the whole thing with these boxes and these vessels are that only a certain amount of people can have not only access to them, but actually solve them.
Sure.
Right? And there have been instances where, like, people come upon these things and accidentally open them.
Well, I mean, like, in the first one, Kirstie is a perfect example.
Right. And accidentally open them. Now, but when you seek these things out, it is to gain audience, like they do with the Cenobites. I just think the thing with the blade and the blood and the sacrifice thing is just, it's a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's only there to up the body count?
I mean, yeah.
No, and my point is like, it's only up there to up the body count because nobody is fucking interesting enough in this movie to carry the goddamn story. We're always fumbling to the next fucking person to fucking get cut on this box just well, so we can just stumble into something else.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah. I actually ended up liking Riley by the end of the movie.
I hate this character.
I can't even really defend her because she is pretty fucking awful.
God, she is just a piece of shit, and she never, there's no comeuppance for being it, and like, we're supposed to feel bad for her, and it's like, what
I felt bad for her.
I don't feel bad for her.
I don't think she really did anything that horrible.
She didn't do anything that horrible, she's just a kind of a scumbag.
Yeah, no, she is. I feel like, I won't go so far as to say there's a fucking hero's journey, but I think by the end of the movie, which granted, because most of her fucking friends and family are dead because of what she did, she is remorseful, but it's only after all this horrible fucking shit. Okay, hold on one second. I do want to mention one reason why I do kind of like, by the end of the film, feel for her.
Mm-hmm.
Is the whole boyfriend situation. Because on a rewatch, because, okay, we're obviously, you know the show, we spoil the shit out of it. So if you don't know that by now, here you
go. I think we've talked about the movie enough where Sean liked it, I didn't like it, spoilers incoming, here it goes, baby.
We opened the box and we came and here we're going.
Spoilers, shut this fucking episode off and go watch the movie. If you don't want spoilers and then come back, we'll be right here. If you want spoilers, continue listening.
Yeah. If we even need to say it. But yeah. The boyfriend basically is working for Voight the whole time. Now, first viewing, I have caught me totally off guard. I had no fucking clue it was going to come. Like, there was a couple scenes where it was like, that was a little odd. Like, and there was like when she first goes to his apartment, I'm like, wow, this guy's got a really fucking nice apartment. What the hell's he do for a living? And then come to find out, Voight hired him, probably gave him a shit ton of money. And then, like, basically the plot is like, Voight paid him to get the box.
Yeah.
And then basically collect the souls.
I understand. He paid him to prey upon less fortunate people, i.e. drug addicts, recovering alcoholics. I get it.
But I guess.
But it's not interesting.
I'm just trying to explain it. Yeah. The idea of like, I guess he actually falls in love with her because of like that scene in the beginning when they're fucking.
He's fucking the shit out of her.
Yeah.
And he's like, love you, babe. And she's like, what?
But I think that's what's
you need
happening.
To drop that bitch like a hot potato, dude. That's a fix me situation.
Seriously.
Or let me fix you situation.
I mean, she's taking pills and everything throughout the film. I mean, they show it all. They make sure you know that she's got serious problems.
Yeah.
But it's this whole situation where like he's supposed to just kill her and then go on to the next victim, but he falls in love with her because I guess he takes too long to move on with his mission. And then like as the movie's going on, he keeps hemming and hawing and like, you don't really pick up on it as much until you see it a second time or you know that he's actually in on everything. But there's like, he's a very weird character because by the end of the film, like, you think maybe he's finally like had a change of heart, but then he lets all the Cenobites in, like when they're like down to like the final two people.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, any chance of like redemption you had, bro, is now fucking flushed down the toilet. And then when like, because fuck it, we're already spoiling it. Like at the end.
Yeah, the spoilers.
When you basically find out, like, okay, she gets marked.
Yep.
And basically she has to then get other people so that she doesn't get killed. Okay, fine. So
it follows.
That didn't bother me too much, but yeah, you're right.
13 ghosts, anybody? Ah. With this fucking mansion with these stupid fucking things that move back and forth? Dude, it's 13 ghosts.
But
with
also,
Hellraiser.
Like, to be fair, man, like, Hellraiser 1, I mean, they're making sacrifices. It's done way better.
No, they're not. Well,
yeah, she's killing all those fucking men with the claw.
Yeah, to bring Frank back because he needs blood to form his body. That's way different than opening the gate to the alternate dimension.
It is way different. I guess that's. They took that concept from one and used it in a different way.
And
it whether
sucks.
It's successful or not.
And it sucks. You want to know why? Because in the first one, I don't want to keep comparing it.
You have to some extent.
No, but just story-wise.
Yeah, yeah.
You have these two, you have one fucking maniac who is completely insatiable and will do anything to come back and he'll kill anybody he has to do it.
That classic rat scene.
Right,
like,
right. But like, and then you have Julia, who is this woman who's hates her fucking life, hates her marriage, got that one taste of Frank and wants to walk on the fucking wild side, baby. And she thinks that if she brings Frank back, she can relive that night where she fucked him on the wedding,
on the
dress.
Wedding dress. Yeah.
And happily ever after. So there's like two pretty strong story points going
true.
There and ulterior motives from both character, and they never really meet in the middle.
No, yeah.
You know what I mean? Plus you have the Kirstie character who's just kind of has audience to all of this.
Yeah.
Now it makes more sense in the book because she loves Rory and that's why she keeps going to to the house and shit like that.
In the movie it makes sense too because it's her dad.
It's her dad, yeah.
But
before we keep going, the Riley character, all of those people are there just to die.
I mean, you're right.
No,
you are right.
There's not really any sob story. We don't really know what happens before, why she became an alcoholic or why she's living with her brother.
That's
true. And then, like, she gets all fucked up and opens the box per chance and cuts. And then her brother ends up cutting himself.
That was kind of stupid. I agree with you there. And he gets taken
away. And I'm like, is this what we're doing? Like, it's like this final destination shit where like everything has to line up for somebody else to take the box to get cut and not have it be Riley, right?
Yeah.
It's so fucking stupid to me because you could have had this tortured character, right? Which I thought was great. I was like, oh, she's a recovering alcoholic. She's got a fucking pill problem. All these problems.
Well,
with her.
When she dumps the pills on the sidewalk and I knew she was going to pick them back up.
I know. And
it's a pretty powerful scene.
And I thought that was pretty powerful where they're all disgusting on the ground, she eats him. I thought she was our Uncle Frank.
Oh.
That's what I'm trying to get at, she's like, fuck all this, and like maybe she stumbles upon the box. This is before I saw the movie, stumbles upon the box, and somebody kind of, you know, entices her to be like, yeah, the she hates this world, clearly. Because she's getting fucked up to escape, right? Go to this other one. So I thought that's where we were going with it, which would have been infinitely more interesting than what the fuck we got.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's just here. Oh, don't touch the box. Oh my God. I can't believe you touched the box. Now you're going to die.
Yeah. No, yeah.
We got to figure out where this box came from. Do you have the shipping container guy's number where it came from? Oh, it was attached to this woman who was in the beginning of, in the prologue of the movie.
All right. It's his lawyer. Makes sense.
I know, but like they go to see her in like a mental institution.
She's in a retirement home.
Is it a retirement?
Yeah.
No, she's in a fucking hospital, bro.
Either way, it's not a mental institution.
All right, fine. Well, no, she has like degenerative lung disease or something.
Yeah,
so yeah, she's in a hospital.
Like a cancer.
She's in a home.
And fuck her. She gets what's owed to her.
I know, but there's so much.
She's just a fucking dumbass sticking her finger in the hole.
There's no.
I get what you're trying to say.
I know, but like, I want to make sure that I say this correctly.
Sure.
There's so much of let the evil people get the comeuppance and none of the good people suffering. Does that make sense?
It does make sense because I feel like, and I actually like this, but I understand where you're coming from.
Because the whole time you're like, yeah, get him. Yeah, get the bad guy. Yeah, she's a bitch or whatever. And it's like,
I wasn't doing that at all, but I could see what you're saying.
No, but that's what they were going for.
Sure.
For those scenes. Like, ah, fuck her. She's a piece of shit that helped that dude in the beginning. You know?
Because, like, the kills in the movie, I just list them off, is, like, her brother gets taken out and you don't see it, which I like.
He gets fucking Candyman, dude.
I like that, though. Like, I really appreciate where they did, like, use the music from Hellraiser. I thought it was kind of an interesting way to reuse it, personally. Where they would use it as, like, when the Cenobites show up, which they did do in the original, and I want to say the sequels. You'd have like that droning sound in the background, and then the walls would start to separate.
It's cool, and the toll of the bell and all that shit, and that's cool. But I don't like that they just show up every time somebody gets their hand cut, and they're just like, oh, I'm here to take you. And then, you know, once you know, collect all the pieces of the fucking puzzle, and you get...
They won't give you your wish. Then,
or something.
Yeah, you know? The brother gets killed, and then basically the rest of the movie, they're trying... Basically, Riley's trying to figure out what the fuck happens. Her boyfriend knows what happened, but, like, is trying to be, like, coy about it.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a character that is almost, like, you think is going to be, like, the one that she kind of leans on, because obviously it is her boyfriend.
Well, she's the only
one running back to him.
Well, yeah. Well, now he's the only one she can really confide in. And the brother's boyfriend is like, where have you been?
He is like, honestly, probably my favorite character in the movie because
he's the only one with some common sense.
Yeah. And very justified in his concerns.
Yes.
Like, my fucking boyfriend's dead or missing. And you're just like fucking off with this other guy and not explaining what's happening to us.
Which breaks the story for me because she's being just a jerk off. Now, she's not under the influence anymore. You know what I mean? She's just like, shut up. I'm trying to have my own adventure over here. You know what I mean?
A little bit, yeah.
Figure it out. And it's like, that doesn't make sense. Why would she do that? Why wouldn't she work with, you know, she doesn't even love this fucking guy that she's been fucking. And like, that's her brother's boyfriend and their roommates that she's been staying with. Like,
right, yeah.
Clearly she's known them and she's close to them. Why the fuck isn't she with them for most of the movie?
Again,
they come and they track her to the fucking mansion.
Well,
and it's like, give me a break.
The boyfriend Trevor goes and gets them. That's the whole thing.
It's still stupid.
Because he knows where the mansion is. Again, because he's fucking working for the guy.
And he needs to get them all there because it's some 13 ass fucking ghost shit.
I guess I haven't seen 13 Ghosts, so it didn't bother
me. Where the fucking, everything, all the rooms move and lock you in and then come together and it's like this big fucking thing that's gonna channel
it's a big one of these.
That's
literally what it is. That's what he's going for.
I know, but
it's fucking cool.
I don't like it.
I thought it was cool.
I thought
it he's totally got a I'm sure you love this. I thought it was cool. You probably fucking hated it.
What?
He's got a maze in his backyard. He's got a fucking labyrinth right outside his
house. I think that's kind of cool. Look, again, it's a cool character. It's a cool concept, but it's too much like 13 Ghosts.
I guess I haven't seen 13 Ghosts. Like, I have to now watch it to see where you're coming from.
It's getting the sacrifices together and then appeasing the gods and then opening the gateway and getting your wish granted or eternal life or whatever the fuck it is.
Well, okay, so we start to actually get
And they never explain how the fuck, dude, he's just in the basement of this house. Now, he's dead.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
What do you mean he's dead?
He solves the box. He gets his wish. He got audience with Leviathan, and he wanted something. What did he want?
He wanted the sexual one, sensation.
Sensation. So what did they do? Fully clothed, they shove something through his fucking chest or something.
I mean, they're outward, otherworldly beings, Joe. You've already established that.
It's fucking
stupid.
They're
shooting fucking hooks from off-screen
at people.
Yeah,
but it's fucking stupid. You got these Cenobites all ripped up and all weird and disfigured and shit, and this guy is in a full suit with this dumb thing.
Well, don't worry. He'll get to that point at the end.
I know, but like...
I can't even really argue because I totally get your argument. I just really enjoyed that.
I thought it was just corny.
Yeah,
like
I thought it was cool.
It was like, you know, the cape off the fucking face shit. Like, hey, brought you all to my mansion.
When he's in the walls, like the fucking boy. And
he's like fucking Castle Freak. What's going on there? How is he in this world is my point. If the Cenobites took him.
Well, they didn't take him because they straight up showed them shove that thing in his chest. And he's just like stuck there with this thing in his chest. And I think he even says, oh, this thing's twisting my nerves. And they do a close up on it. And it's like this fucking mechanism that like every like 15 seconds or a minute or something.
It clicks.
It clicks and pulls literally his nerves on this fucking thing. And it's like, holy shit.
It's fucking child's play compared to what the Cenobites would do to him. That's my point. It's like,
yeah. All
right, you stuck a fucking music box in his chest. Great.
Right. With that said, I get where you're coming from, but I think the idea being is whatever this is, whether it looks stupid or not,
sure,
is that this is putting him in extreme pain like every minute for the last 6 fucking years.
I understand what they're trying to do, but it's just like
doesn't work for you.
It doesn't work for me because it's too simple.
For Hellraiser.
It's too simple. Like, if you're gonna do this big baddie motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's not even...
Especially since he's, like, literally, like, getting people to be killed so he can just get an audience.
He's not even a Shannar.
Selling their...
You know what I'm
saying? Selling their souls to the fucking Cenobites so he can get this thing in his... Well, he doesn't know that, but...
I mean, he's probably done some questionable shit because he's a rich asshole, but he's mostly just like, yeah, I don't know. I was, like, kind of, like, into the occult, and I heard about this thing, and I was like, yeah, maybe I'll open it. And he did. And it was just like...
He paid a lot of money for it.
I Frank was literally killing motherfuckers and snorting fucking heroin and like killing people and fucking people and doing all this shit, you know, like real scumbag motherfucker. I don't know. It's just like,
it's very different.
It's very different and different to the point where it loses its impact for me.
Okay. I do like the kills, though, that you do see.
The kills are cool. The effects are amazing.
The effects are fucking amazing. I think the Cenobites look incredible.
I don't want to take away from that. Like, the effects are fucking
the
awesome.
The gore is
in this
really
movie.
Top-notch.
And they're all practical. Like, I saw...
When the dude's getting his arm ripped off with the barbed wire and the skin's just getting flayed.
And that was sick, but that's not everything, is my point.
Right, yeah. And Nora, I think that was the roommate when she gets killed. And, like, that scene's really great where she's, like, just the pain. And she's, like, and Pinhead. They do this weird thing. Like, I know they always had, like, a reverberation on the voices, but I think it's a little overly reverberated, for lack of a better term. Because when I watched it the first time, I wasn't totally clear what they were saying all the time.
Yeah.
On a rewatch, I did, so maybe I just too fucked up.
Could have been.
But
maybe that's why you enjoyed it so much.
I liked it almost as much on the second viewing.
Just fucking with you.
But yeah, she says like something like, what do you want? And she's like, salvation! And then like Pinhead's like, yeah, what is that going to do? And then fucking rips her back off. Like, that was cool.
When the thing comes out of the main bad guy and his...
And it all drops on the floor like fucking like a bucket of bolts.
Well, it all drops and then it like reforms.
That was cool.
That's
that
all was, practical. Was it practical. It was all practical. I was like, that's incredible. I forget who I follow. One of the effects people I follow on Instagram, I didn't even know they worked on it, but they like to put, like, after the movie comes out, they like to post all the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, that was fucking cool.
And there's a lot of Cenobites in this. And from what I know, there are a lot added as the series went on.
Yeah, but there's
some really creepy ones.
Yeah, there's like a main five. There's like the four of them and then the engineer.
Yeah. Well, even in this, though, it's like Pinhead is the only one that really gets any spoken lines. She's not in it a ton, or it's not in it a ton, I should say.
Yeah.
Chatter's pretty great in this, I think, honestly.
Kind of cool, yeah.
I like that he actually bites somebody and fucks him up pretty good. There's, I think, that one, the gape I was saying earlier. There's that one that has, like the way the flesh is, looks like it's wearing a fucking hat. There's, like, a pregnant one at one point for, like, a hot second at the end.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean,
they're cool looking.
It's
hard to compare to the original because the originals are so iconic. I think it is two very different things.
In the same breath, what I will say is that they're much more in tune with the original novel. As in terms of like what they look like, and especially like even the pins in Pinhead have that. It's like in the book they're like jeweled at the end, but in the movie they're like pearls, which I thought was
well,
cool.
The one actually in that when that lawyer gets killed takes one out of one of the other one's eyes and sticks it in her mouth. And she's like, what does she say? She's like, stop breathing so heavy, save it for screaming or something like that. It's like pretty. There's some good one-liners.
I mean, it's look. The gore is cool. The Cenobites are cool.
Yeah.
It's just like the story is so fucking weak for me that I really don't like it. It's a hodgepodge of other movies that I don't really like.
Sure.
And this does it so well.
Well.
The first time.
Yeah.
You could have enhanced that. Okay. Like I said in the beginning with Frank having like all of his senses, like you could have did some cool, like weird Spider-Man shit where like, you know, you like it zooms in and you see the dust touch his flesh and there's like, I'm like thinking of all these cool, like cinematic
things
that you could have done with that. And like, it's just, it's like they missed a point is what I'm trying to say throughout this whole fucking thing.
Got ya. No, I mean, I could see it. I mean, the only other thing I really want to mention is like the ending. And then we could just, I mean, like we said, you guys already kind of know where we stand on this, but I like that then she does swap, you know, Trevor for Colin, I think his name is, the boyfriend, her brother's boyfriend. I thought that was cool because, like, I like that character, like I said, and I was like, kind of like, man, I need someone else to root for.
There you just said it.
And you know, then our not Chouinard gets fucking his thing swapped because they said we can't take it away, but we can exchange it. So he exchanges it for power, and they're like, okay, you're gonna like this one. A giant fucking like chain from Leviathan who's like hanging up there, just like taking a breather, I guess. This giant fucking
he's God in that universe.
Right.
But like,
which also the box actually looks like him in that configuration.
Oh, in
the Leviathan configuration.
Yeah, the diamond kind of
which
look.
I think is the resurrection one. Anyway.
I don't know.
He gets pulled up because they did the whole thing, like, you know, I forget who says it specifically. I think it might be the lawyer saying how, Void, he always referred to them as angels. You would think a demon would be able to see another one or something to that effect. So like he gets pulled up. And after everyone else gets away, or I guess really Riley and Colin get away, everybody else is dead.
Yeah.
Which Colin gets sliced up the fucking stomach by Void, and I was like, well, he's fucked.
Like, there is a bargain there that they make, but again, it's not.
Also, like,
it's not, it doesn't have the impact of,
no,
of Kirstie having to make Frank reveal himself.
I do like the idea with the knife coming out, or whatever you want to call the blade, that they figure out if they stab one of the Cenobites, it actually counts as a sacrifice, because she does that to the Chatterer.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of a cool kill, because the Chatterer's just like, okay, like backs up, gets into position. Yeah, and Pinhead's like, boom! like Nappa in Dragon Ball Z, the whole place blows up.
But even them themselves, like, then that...
But then, like, that's then Void just is like, fuck it, I don't care, I'll just take whoever. It's like, you should have stabbed the fucking Cenobite stuck in the gate, but I get plot.
But that's a weird thing, because he, like, traps them at one point.
What do you think? They can teleport. That was stupid.
It's just like... You're gonna bend the rules to do shit like that, sure. And I'm like, that's not great.
Maybe they were adamantium fucking bars. I don't know. Maybe they had kryptonite in them.
Yeah, maybe they were.
They were holy. There's holy water.
There was an ancient sigils carved in them where they couldn't. Whatever.
They got it from the nun.
Anyway, he becomes the engineer. Is what happens.
Right, and that's a cool scene.
It's
where
cool.
They,
it looks
they
awesome.
Flay him.
Yeah,
and he's like, it's definitely the kind of what they always talk about: the ultimate pain and.
Pleasure?
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Words escaping me.
Well,
because he's smiling while this is happening, and whatever he's staring at is, like, blowing his mind.
Well, he's smiling because his fucking lips get ripped off, and he has no choice.
Yeah, they're held on, like, it's cool.
It's cool. I mean, look, I'm not knocking it for that. The effects are cool. That scene's really neat. It's just all the shit in between. They feel like they didn't know what they wanted to do exactly, and they were so hyper-focused on... making the Cenobites cool and making these cool kills and all this stuff that they forgot to write a good story.
Yeah, I mean, I like the story, but I can see where you're coming from. It is very basic. I also feel like maybe this is like me sounding like
it makes me feel like your audience is stupid, and that's what I hate. It's fucking insulting my intelligence, and I don't like it.
Okay,
it's very like. Do you know what's going on? This is what's going on. I'm going to tell you what's going on.
Yeah, like the monsters.
Yeah. Well, that's a little different.
No, I'm kidding. Kidding. They have a habit of explaining their jokes in that film.
Mm.
I also feel like, and maybe I'm just like totally talking my ass on this, but I was feeling like a lot of like more horror movies in the last few years that I've seen that are similar to this, not the same thing, but like similar, like teenagers and whatnot,
sure.
Whether it's a slasher or horror or not a horror or like a paranormal or whatever. It kind of like lines up with that to some extent. And I'm not like excusing it or saying that's a bonus, like a plus or a minus. But from that perspective, I feel like it feels like a good modern update. To me, based on like stuff I've seen over the last few years, that's not like that's similar, not to Hellraiser per se, but other movies in the horror genre that have similar casts or storylines.
If by,
I guess is what I'm trying to say.
If by that you mean spelling everything out for the audience,
I guess so
that there is no stone left unturned and no mystique to any of it, yes, I would.
I mean, I like the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Let's just.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. It's not great, but it's fine.
I mean, I'd rather watch that again than a new Hellraiser, to be perfectly honest.
Fair enough. Yeah. But I mean, well, I guess with all that said, it's ripe for me, man. I watched it twice. Again, if I'm going to watch another Hellraiser, it's probably going to go back to the first one, but I liked it. I don't know if I like it better than like the first or second one. I didn't actually even talk about it, but my main gripe about the second one is that they tell you that the Cenobites were originally human. I understand that Clive Barker fucking wrote the screenplay,
well,
so I should just leave it to Clive, but I don't like that personally.
Well, that is a thing.
Oh, I know.
They were once human,
yeah.
Question mark.
And it does add something interesting to the lore, don't get me wrong. Just, I don't know, something about that. I don't like it. I don't hate it. It does add a lot of elements to it. I don't know. It rubs me the wrong way. I can't explain it.
I hear you. No, I agree.
I like the movie.
You.
I just, that element, I'm not crazy about.
I agree with you. And coming back, just.
Yeah, bring it back to this movie.
Just to bring it back, the Cenobites are supposed to be tertiary characters, not main characters.
Well, they definitely they elevate them to main in this.
We are the monsters, not them per se, in this universe.
Right, I get it. Boy, but he's so late in the film.
But he's so late, and he gives his fucking mustache twirling speech about all the shit. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Like, this is like some fucking cookie cutter horse shit that I don't fucking need. And it's like, That was your twist. Like, you didn't even have... That was
I
so,
mean, the twist is just that Trevor's actually working with him.
And it's
and the main guy tells him.
And it's not okay. good. Like, you could have told me what the deal was from the beginning and done a better story.
Mm.
Right? I mean, I know that dude was going to come back probably. You know what I mean?
I mean, you would hope since they spent 5 or 10 minutes on it in the beginning.
But he's like, yeah, I've just been in a basement with this thing in my chest for however long.
Trying not to kill myself,
I
guess.
Or whatever. But he shouldn't have been allowed to kill himself anyway.
I guess that's also part of it.
He shouldn't even be in this fucking plane of existence, is my point.
Right, he should have just been... He should have been... What happened to him at the end of the movie should have been happening to him right off the get-go.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they would have they would have taken him and tortured the fuck out of him in their realm. Yeah. You know what I mean? They don't let you hang out here. That's not the fucking deal.
Well, these ones do.
I don't.
Jamie Clayton
fucking
does.
Stupid. It just doesn't. It takes away from it. And there's wherein telling you everything that happens, they don't explain shit like that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, how is he staying here? If everybody's getting killed and taken into, like, literally, her brother gets fucking candymanned into the next dimension. Like, why didn't he get killed and taken to the?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, why the fuck is he in his house?
I mean, they show his ghost a couple times, and then they have, like, the whole thing where...
He's like a corporeal being.
Yeah, to, like, the fuck with Riley, and it's like... I did kind of like that she realizes, like, yeah, no matter what prize she picks, it's not going to end well. Like, he probably would have come back like an Uncle Frank, honestly. That's what I was thinking.
That's more interesting to me. Like, if... Okay, so, like, fine, you leave the blades in the thing, and it cuts the person and takes him. Now it's her brother trying to get back. And
maybe,
like,
that's a sequel.
No, but, like, that's more compelling to me. And, like, maybe the brother, like, dupes her into her, like, makes her feel bad for all the shit that she's done over the years and, like, kind of guilts her into killing herself or something to bring him back, or, like, kill other people to bring him back. Just like the Julie character. Like, that would have been a cool twist, man.
You know what? I mean, I don't know if we need a sequel to this. Maybe we'll get it. I'm curious how well it did because it was right to Hulu.
Yeah.
But maybe, like, that might be an interesting
but
thing.
But, like, doesn't
the
that
same
sound
characters?
Cool?
Like,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, because he was, like, actually kind of, like, a good dude, and that was, like, the point.
Right.
But, like, if you're getting tortured and ripped apart, because we don't know what happened to him. We just see the blood on the sink. We see what happens to Nora. We see what happens to the lawyer, more or less. But we don't see what happens to him, so he could just still be getting tortured for all we know.
Exactly.
But, yeah, so you have the sequel where it's, like, yeah, my fuck-up sister... who I do love, but is a fuck up, basically got me killed and I've been tortured beyond belief.
Yeah.
I need revenge.
It's like his ultimate revenge.
Yeah.
And then I
that could be interesting.
But I like that because you wouldn't know that going in. Yeah. That's a good twist. So she finally, like, he's like, you gotta kill for me or whatever. And she, like, she's all fucked up. She's taking her fucking pills again. She's getting shit faced. She's fucking killing people, fucking dudes. Just like, that would have been a great thing. And
the
like,
kind of mixing the Jamie and Kirsty character almost.
And like a horrible kind of spiral for that character. Like, I don't like that she just kind of gets away scot free and there's no penance for anything that she's done except for maybe her brother dying, but that's not even really her fault.
Right. Or I guess the idea that because now she lost everyone, she's got to deal with that. But...
She flatlines the entire fucking movie. She stays in the same spot and then walks away at the end with the fucking box.
Does she take the box at the end?
I don't know.
I think she just leaves it there.
Does she? Who the fuck?
Gotta set up for the sequel.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, that was Hellraiser 2022. Well, I liked it, Joe didn't, so read between the lines.
And as always, form your own opinions. Yeah. Watch the movie yourself. Nothing we say should be taken as gospel, right? Watch the movie and judge it for yourself.
And at some point, like we said, we'll be doing some more Hellraiser, but nope, no announcement because it probably could be a year or two from now.
We will come back to it and delve deeper into why other films did it better.
Sure, sure. Still liked it, but okay.
It's
sign
fine.
Me up.
I'm never going to watch it again. Also, just by the way, I know I've just went on a fucking tangent about how, the original is better than the new one and whatever, but like, everybody's saying that this movie's so good just because the last fucking, six films in this franchise sucked is not grounds to say that this is a good movie. Okay? I just don't, that's bullshit. You can't say that fucking six movies suck, so we got a one that's half decent or not as shitty as the other ones and then be like, this is the best fucking Hellraiser movie ever.
That's also maybe a problem with a franchise I mentioned earlier, but hey, I mean, to each his own.
It's possible.
So anyway, I've been Sean the Gape O'Rourke, I guess.
The Order of the Gash, the Gape. I'm Joel Escola, and we will catch you on the next Ripe Reviews.